This is New York Now.
Here at the Renaissance Hotel in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. I'm Casey Seiler, state editor for the Albany Times Union. I'm here with my New York Now colleague, Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. We are happy to be joined by Mike Gormley of Newsday and another Long Islander, Larry Levy, dean of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University. And we're here to offer some analysis. Let's talk, first of all, about what we just heard at the Thursday Republican state delegation breakfast. And the marquee player, I think it's safe to say, was Rudy Giuliani, who gave a hammer and tong attack on Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, you name it, including lots of talk about the fact that she should be indicted, ought to end up in an orange jumpsuit. Larry, is that going to play well?
Well, I think hammer and tong is probably pretty mild. It was more of a nuclear attack. When you ask a question about whether it's going to play well, it's really a question of who we're talking about. I mean, it's red meat, as we say. It's going to play well with the base, but it's also people that you already have, people who, if they're not already pretty revved up, you're in a heck of a lot of trouble. The important question is whether it plays with the so-called suburban soccer moms.
That's
moderate,
kind of what I meant,
right? Moderate, independent, suburban women, or even not so suburban, who shy away from extremist language and policies from both parties. They rejected the Democrats in the 70s and 80s. I may have my decades mixed up a little bit. And they didn't really come back home until Bill Clinton started singing a more moderate song. So I have a feeling that either it's not going to play well with them, or if it has some resonance now, by the time we get to an election, it's going to seem like old stuff, and voters will say, well, what else you got?
Well, he really went there with Bill Clinton's sexual harassment incidents in the 90s. He called him a
predator president.
And, you know, I think women are really uncomfortable with that topic. So do you think that that could resonate? Certainly things were different, even in terms of sexual harassment, how people viewed it in the 90s now. We've come a really long way, and maybe younger people looking at that might be shocked.
I've interviewed women who are uncomfortable with Hillary Clinton because they feel that, as Giuliani said, she enabled her husband, she covered up. I mean, these are all quote-unquote. But I've also talked to women who say, well, how dare they tell another woman she should leave her husband, that she should not be loyal and try to hold her family together. So it's really hard to know for sure how this is going to play.
And also, well, let's listen to a clip of what Giuliani said.
Bill Clinton, our predator president, with his wife who enabled him, aided him, covered up for him, and headed the bimbo squad. You've seen the movie, what is that, Color with John Travolta, right? Think it's true? They had all these women. They had to go scare them to keep their mouth shut. Hillary knew about all that. If Monica Lewinsky hadn't come up with a dress, they would have destroyed her. They would have made her into some kind of an insane person. This is a woman who cares about the rights of women?
No.
Do you think I'm stupid, Hillary? You think I believe that you care about the rights of women when you cover up the sexual predatory actions of your husband that would get any executive in America fired in 2 seconds and would put some of them in jail?
So what do you think of that, Mike? What's your reaction?
Well, I think it's always dangerous when you start talking about blocks of vote, like the women vote. These are all individuals. But if you're coming down to a situation, you have to look at really what do women care about. And the polls will show us that it's not so much what Bill Clinton may have done. It's the platform. It's abortion rights. It's reproductive rights. It's women's health care. And you're going to find an awful lot of women are showing in the polls that they don't think that Donald Trump is on their side.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened on Wednesday night. Surely the most dramatic moment sequence in the primetime program last night was when Ted Cruz, out giving his speech, it became clear that he wasn't going to, and he sort of seemed to walk right up to the line of endorsing Donald Trump, did not, which led to chants, calls specifically from the New York State delegation, New York front and center, right again in the convention hall, Cruz ended up getting booed off the stage. And here in the breakfast delegation, words were used like traitor, Judas, fraud, liar, pledge breaker, you name it. Does it run the risk of overwhelming the narrative of party reconciliation that Trump has been trying to talk about?
Yeah, I think that the Trump campaign has had a hard time in this convention in staying on message. The very first day, the message was party unity and making America safe again. And in the morning, the Trump campaign manager goes off on an attack against John Kasich. Now, great, Kasich has been anything but a loyalist to the Trump campaign. The governor of Ohio has refused to endorse him. But this is a state that Trump has to win. No Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio. And John Kasich is the most popular politician in the state. Leave him alone, for God's sakes, and stay on message. And then, throughout the week, we've had these problems. Melania Trump, the alleged plagiarism. And again, on Wednesday, it was Ted Cruz. I see this as organizational issues. I see this as discipline issues. And you could say, we're making a mountain out of a molehill. But, running a presidential campaign is like running an enormous business. There's a tremendous number of moving parts. And you've got to be able to control your narrative, your message. And they have not been able to do it for 3 days.
So much of what goes on at a convention or in politics in general is what's going on away from the microphones. And if you talk to the Republicans who aren't there saying, we're unified, we're all behind Trump, there's a lot of concern about Trump still in the Republican Party. They're not here, not many of them, but there's a lot of concern, and a lot of people stayed away from the convention altogether. Ted Cruz set himself up for, if Donald Trump loses in November, as being the guy who's going to take the party in a different direction. A still conservative guy, but he's the guy who's going to be looked at as the guy who stood up to Donald Trump. That could pay off for him in the future.
You got to admit, though, it has not been boring. It has not been predictable. The drama has been riveting every single night. I don't know how that's going to play out, good or bad.
But drama that's good for us and the number of clicks you get online is not necessarily good for a campaign. And
good point.
Of the things that Trump was able to do throughout the primary was control the narrative, dominate the narrative, dictate what most of the full-time professional journalists covering the campaign had to deal with, which makes this business of how the media has gone after him when most of the coverage was actually positive. But by and large, he has lost control of the message, the narrative.
Go ahead.
Well, and say, I would just add to what Larry's saying, is that part of the reason he's lost a little bit of the control is that this wasn't the primary anymore. This wasn't throwing red meat out all the time. He should have motivated the base, which he's done, I think, to some degree here at the convention. But he's also supposed to put meat on the bones of some of this stuff. That has not been a strong suit of Donald Trump or his campaign.
He and all the surrogates have spent a lot of time, sometimes brutally, sometimes very entertainingly, to make a case of why they believe Hillary Clinton should not be president. We're now in the fourth and final day. And at a certain point, you got to pivot and say, well, what are you going to do different? If you've persuaded all these people, the soccer moms, the Reagan Democrats, I spent a day yesterday out in Parma, Ohio, the spiritual home of Reagan Democrats, talking to union guys. There aren't enough of them who might want to leave their party again like they did for Ronald Reagan. But they got to hear what it is he's really going to do. And so far we haven't heard that. Maybe it'll be his acceptance speech.
Well, everybody keeps talking about that. Trump's going to pivot. You wait and see. He's going to pivot. I mean, this is his kind of his last chance tonight, right?
Well, he's actually tried to do that a few times in the primary, if you recall, and he pulled back. He says, they want me to calm down. They want me to relax, and I'm not going to do it. But you're right, Karen. He's going to have to at some point, if they want to go beyond their small but fervent base, and that's what part of what they should have done this convention.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about stagecraft tonight. Trump is famous for these kind of freewheeling speeches that are almost kind of free associational. Tonight, is he going to be able to stick to – what does he have to do? Does he have to stick to the teleprompter? Does he have to find kind of a sweet spot between a real piece of well-shaped, well-crafted political oratory and that kind of freewheeling quality that his rally attendees like? I mean, what does he need to do in terms of stagecraft, in terms of presentational style?
Well, I think the content is more important than the style at this point. I think that however he does it, whether it's going to be in a cloud of faux smoke, like the entrance he made on the first day, or whether he is going to wear a very conservative suit and go left, center, right on the teleprompter, he really has to show something different, whatever that is. And gosh, after being so wrong for so long, I feel silly even trying to suggest what the guy should do or not do, because he is himself. He is a sweet generous.
I mean, I think that's the point. He's gonna, I don't know. I think he's gonna do what he's gonna do, because right, that's how he's been through the whole campaign so far.
Well, I would also just say, out of fairness, I'm not sure that'd be a problem if he's very Trumpish tonight.
Very good point. Yeah.
He's got a stage like he's never had before. There's gonna be a lot of people watching. If he goes and he just rallies people, and they're going to be giving him all kinds of ammunition because they're going to be shouting, screaming, it's going to be a difficult speech to get through. I'm not sure he's going to be able to resist going off, just going off on this. And I'm not sure that would be a bad thing for him either.
Okay, one of the reasons we wanted to have you two on is you're experts on Long Island and the suburbs.
We've had a lot of Western New Yorkers. We had Chris Collins and Carl Palladino over the last 2 days, so it's time to represent the right-hand side.
I don't think, did we mention that Larry used to work for Newsday for a very long time, so he has a long...
30 years, 7 months, and 14 days.
That's right.
That mean it was a good job or a bad job?
Day was a full day. I gave them 8 hours.
Right. So you guys know Long Island. You know the New York City suburbs. How do you think Trump's going to play there? And how is that going to affect the state Senate races? As we know, the Senate Republicans are hanging on with their fingernails to control the Senate.
Assuming that there's no enormous tectonic event that changes what we know and what we've come to know about Long Island, Trump will probably do well in Suffolk County, which is the eastern suburb, 1.4 million, more conservative overall, and what we kind of call a redneck suburb. And that's why Lee Zeldin, who's running for reelection for the first time out in a Brookhaven congressional district, went all in. It's why Tom Croce, running in the Senate, went all in early with Trump, because they made the calculation that he could be a positive. Nassau County, not so much. There are more Democrats. Mm-hmm. The race to fill the Steve Israel's congressional seat with Jack Martin's and Tom Suozzi. There's a lot of liberal Democrats up there on the North Shore. You've got Queens Democrats there. I'm not sure that Donald Trump is going to help much. And I think a case could be made the special election to fill Skelos' seat.
Between Todd Kominsky and Chris McGrath.
Yeah, the rematch.
Joe Mondello came out early to endorse Trump. The calculation was that he could not afford to alienate Trump supporters. But Trump was used as a rallying cry, particularly in the minority community. This caught me by surprise. I was surprised at just how many black and Latino voters showed up for a special election when it's very hard to get them to the polls for a general election. And McGrath lost by a few hundred votes. General election, there's going to be a lot more Democrats in the booth than Republicans, and I'm not sure Trump's going to help there.
So what are the hot races, Mike?
Well, we've got a whole bunch of hot races. The one you just mentioned, the Kaminsky race, if he holds on, then you've got a Democrat who's going to be winning, breaking the Long Island Nine. That has been a strong group. You start to break that, you start to see other fissures through this. The Senate also has some of its most senior and powerful members on Long Island. And there are many in districts that are very closely Republican-Democrat. Some are dominant Democratic voters. You've got a lot of opportunity here for changes.
And a lot of them aren't at this convention, right? The senior Long Island Republicans that you mentioned, the senators, right?
Right. Only about four or five of them saying that that's not unusual. It seems unusual. It's a difficult thing to be seen at a Trump rally if you're in a district with a lot of Democrats. So there's some good reasons to stay away. A Newsday poll showed surprisingly strong support for Donald Trump before the New York primary. We just saw John Flanagan go all in for Donald Trump.
That's right. That
says a lot because it means he's made a decision that that's going to work for them.
That's right. He just spoke at the delegates' breakfast saying the strongest I've heard him say, I'm in for Trump.
I mean, I think Donald Trump will have more to do with whether the Republicans retain control of the Senate than anything else, than any other person, than any other issue, than even the ability to raise a lot more money than the Democrats, even whether Andrew Cuomo decides to help out his friends in the Senate, Republican.
That's a topic for a whole other podcast,
right.
I think.
Okay, Mike Gormley, will you be in Philadelphia for the Democratic convention?
I won't be, but Newsday will have many people. Yancey Roy will be there, definitely.
All right, then we will say aloha to you from this convention. I just noticed you have the best Secret Service picture I've seen so far. You look like Russell Crowe in that thing.
I took it myself.
Very nice.
Well,
Mike Gormley.
We're going to put that up on the website, I guess.
Clearly, for the ladies. Mike Gormley of Newsday, Larry Levy from Hofstra University. I'm Casey Seiler of the Albany Times Union. I'm here with Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. That was the last convention cast of the GOP National Convention. Please join us again next week when we'll be in Philadelphia talking to upstate, downstate Democrats. Thanks very much.